Welcome to Season 4 of Healthcare Fraud Shield's podcast. As a reminder, Healthcare Fraud Shield is a software as a service company focused solely on fraud, waste and abuse, cost containment, and payment integrity. You can find more information about our various modules and offerings at our website at www.hcfraudshield.com. Hello, and welcome to Healthcare Fraud Shield's podcast. This is season 4, 2. My name is Karen Weintraub, and today I have with me Ken Cole. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. So, Ken, why don't you introduce yourself, explain kind of what you do, where you work, and how long we've known each other.
Okay, great. Well, hello, everybody. My name is Ken Cole. I am the Director of Special Investigations for Healthcare Fraud Shield. I've been in the industry since 2006. And actually, I've known Karen that long. She was the first face that I saw on my first day when I started in the healthcare FWA realm. I've been with Healthcare Fraud Shield since 2014. And started as a supervisory investigator, eventually becoming director of the department.
Well, and we are happy to have you. And as you've noted, we've worked together a long time. So it's been quite a ride. And the industry landscape in some ways has changed, in some ways it hasn't. But I, you know, for this season, what my goal was to kind of talk about maybe not, you know, necessarily your very first investigation, but something you consider to be kind of a first. So I thought maybe we could just talk a little bit about what's something that comes to your mind that you thought would be interesting to discuss.
Great. Yeah. So along those lines, I think the case that's probably most impactful, again, and I would say probably one of the more impactful ones in my career, actually started soon after I joined Healthcare Fraud Shield back in 2014. I had just come into a company, probably I was there less than a year at this point, and was really learning the Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Shield product, and again, playing around with it, working with data, at least in this particular program, and looking just using my prior experience, looking for things that I found unusual. So, of course, at this time, I was still feeling my way around, and I was looking at low-hanging fruit. So to those ends, I was looking, of course, at providers that were typically billing the high medical decision-making 99215 office evaluation and management code. I know some of you are laughing out there because, again, I think we've all done that at times just to see who's who could be potentially using that code for nefarious purposes. But in this case, this is a time that it really did pan out for an interesting case. What made this so interesting is the specialty of the provider that I happened to note that was billing it. The provider was listed at least in our system as mental health other as their specialty. And I viewed that as a little unusual, again, considering knowing what type of work at the time would have to go into qualifying for a 99215. I mean, let alone the 60-minute time component. The actual work that would be required as far as history exam and medical decision making. So I found that intriguing. So looking further into the particular subject that was billing this code, I could really find no history of what specialty they really were. So with that, again, on consultation agreement of our client, we did open a case on this particular provider. In reviewing the MPI information, there was a medical license that, or apparently a medical license number for the provider, and the state boards had no indication of this provider under that medical license number. In fact, there was no license, whether it be physician, whether it be some sort of therapist, no sort of nurse. And I probably spent more time than I should have trying to track down this medical license number. So now the plot is definitely indeed thickening as far as to my suspicions with this provider.
Hey, Ken, I'm gonna stop you there for a second, because there are a couple of things that you said I think are interesting just from a data point. One, you kind of, you know, we're chuckling a little bit about the 99215. It's kind of been a thorn in our side forever.
Yes.
Seems to go away. And I always have to add my one coding caveat hat is that the code has changed since this case. The code has changed. The time has actually changed, and the definition of it has changed a little bit more recently. But it is still an ongoing issue. So just because we kind of get tired of the same old scheme, the same old schemes keep popping up, which is why we keep looking at them. So I think it's a good point to emphasize that schemes get recycled. So one of the reasons why we still monitor high level E&M is because schemes are cyclical. And, you know, there's just a new way that folks try to get around doing it. So I think it's just, you know, I know we get tired of the E&Ms, but it's still important to take a look at them. So that was one data point. I don't know if you want to respond to that.
Yeah. And again, I did not mention at the outset of the call that I am a certified professional coder. You know, again, if even coder or not, if you see a provider, especially one not in one of the more advanced practices, especially at that time, considering the requirements of that code, it was still unusual for that particular specialty to be billing that code. And I think to Karen's point, is classics are classics for a reason. I mean, that it is just something that has been, as Karen had said, a thorn in our side. And especially when just doing a general search, it was a good place to sit there and start to see if we can make something of it, see if we can validate it. And in this case, it actually, again, opened the door to some really interesting findings.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then the only other thing I was going to add is, you know, talking about NPI, you know, one of the things that I think is most most experienced investigators and analysts know is obviously bringing in and looking at other types of information and doing it. I know one of the things that we work on and, you know, Ken's a big part of is trying to automate all these processes. So, you know, our experiences from where we were, you know, 15, 20 years ago are different in the tools that we have today. So it's just kind of neat to see the progression of how we've been able to make this process more efficient.
Right. And I will say to Karen's point again, about, again, 15, 20 years ago is, again, when I first walked through the door on that January day, the process would have been totally different. It would have been a largely manual process using more rudimentary tools and probably a lot of spreadsheets at that point. Having for Waste and Abuse Shields basically helped us be able to narrow in on that particular provider's billing at that time, especially using a 99215 code. It did make the identification somewhat easier than it probably would have been from other tools that I'd used in the past.
Excellent. All right. Well, take us to what happens next.
So from there, we do through the, you know, again, we do our due diligence. We, you know, I look through the license. I can't find any provider, let alone one that would be, I say, qualified to bill 99215 at such a frequency. And maybe it bears to mention that the frequency that they were billing was near 100%. It was probably about 98% of the claims and payments were due to that 99215. And I think at the time it was nearing six figures. Or recently over six figures. So again, it was fairly significant based on a fairly short time worth of data. So again, opening the case, performing our due diligence, we decided to move on to the medical record requests. And I think one of the more interesting things about the medical record requests was my telephone conversation with the provider. The provider did make contact, and when I returned his call, he was asking me what sort of documentation I wanted. And, you know, again, trying to keep, at this point, you know, we don't want to show all our cards. So I basically said, well, you know, I just need medical documentation to sort of support the services that you're billing. And, again, it took a little while to get the records in. And, again, once we cataloged the records, I turned them over to a certain coder to assist me in the medical record reviews. And I think at this point, I'm going to turn it over to the coder and what she found in the medical record reviews.
Yes, I was honored to be a part of reviewing records, which I don't get a chance to do much anymore. But it was fascinating. I mean, literally, there was no medical record, if you even want to call it a record. It was notations of patients who were on a treadmill or doing leg squats or stretching with the foam roller. That's literally, you know, a documentation of someone's gym regimen was what we identified. And on top of that, there was a note with every single patient record that they had their financial liability waived because of a hardship. So it was just, you know, all around very, 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 very interesting.
So you're in your opinion, also as a coder and as a certified professional medical auditor, would you say that the medical records met the requirements of a 99215?
Absolutely not. Not even close.
See, look, now I'm doing the interview.
There was nothing in there that warranted the billing of anything.
So with that information from Karen, I of course was like, and it's time to do our overpayment letter, to which I drafted and I sent to the provider. And as you may imagine, there was total crickets. There was no response from the provider whatsoever. And again, trying to get in touch with the provider after that was not possible. So again, in collaboration and in communicating our findings to our client, this client was placed on prepay. And so at that point, again, at the point, it was the exposure to this particular provider was I hate to use this word, relatively low. So we left the provider on prepay, and we figured that, again, prepay would basically prevent any more payments going to this provider for apparently billing for monitoring someone's workout. So we come to the conclusions that the 99215 was not supported, nor was this provider qualified to actually bill this particular that particular code. But I will say academically and as represented, he was a quote unquote doctor, though not a doctor of medicine. So, but always like to sit there and advertise their business as a doctor. And you again, through the due diligence, looking up the provider, he represented himself as a kinesiologist and basically was a personal trainer by all accounts. So we had placed him on prepay, and again, not getting any response from the overpayment letter. Some time had passed. Again, it was just, you know, the under the tin that they billed, he was shut down. So again, doing normal follow-up. No money coming in on that out of 10. We identify another 10 in Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Shield exhibiting the same behavior. A little bit more research into this 10, same 99215, same overall billing pattern. However, a different 10 with a different MPI. So at this point, we start doing some searching within our system. There is actually a provision where we could look into our system and actually check these MPIs. We found up to, I think at the time, it was probably between 6 and 8 different practices that we could relate to this personal trainer through either the telephone number, either the provider's name, or the address listed. So what it appeared to us is that we shut down the one particular TIN from receiving further payment, the provider would open another one. And when that TIN would get shut down, again, a couple months later, they would open another one in order to keep that money coming in and flowing based on their workouts. Now, if all this other information that we have already gathered on the provider wasn't interesting enough, perhaps the most interesting thing that we found out in the case is when our client received a call from a person reporting to be the provider's wife. So, of course, again, something that we really should do more of is, again, could we conduct an interview? And, of course, it had to be a phone interview because I was not going to be traveling to the state where this all occurred. And in speaking to the wife of the provider, she let us know some very interesting information. She was basically calling because she was concerned that this particular provider, a personal trainer, was using her physical therapy license and license number in order to get payment for these medical claims. And she was very concerned about that because she didn't want to be attached to it. She also noted that on one of the holidays that had just passed, the provider had given her children iPads. And connected to those iPads was the, the shared plan. So she had access to, to the email of the provider. She noted that the provider had not acknowledged to that the overpayment letter was received by that provider. So we already know that now he's aware of the billing, that the inappropriate billing. We can establish that. Also of interest, about she gave a little bit more detail to what this provider was apparently performing. In most cases, he wasn't even performing the physical therapy. He was actually working with a network across several states of sort of managing workout plans for other physical trainers and providing the plans and corroborating it and then billing it back, or excuse me, correlating it, and then billing these services as medical services to the insurance companies. Even further, another interesting fact that we didn't know is that allegedly this provider actually had a prior conviction for similar involvement. And around the time where this new scheme started, he had recently become released from the guests of the state, allegedly, according to the wife of the provider. So now everything starts to take shape. So everything starts to come together that this truly is a more serious issue than originally figured. When we go back to this, all started because, again, just looking at 99215, and now we actually have what seems like a carefully crafted plan or carefully crafted scheme in order to obtain payment for services that were not rendered as billed by someone who was unqualified to do so. So with this information, we of course went with our client and we provided them all the information and continue to monitor this provider's information through our Query Shield function And every couple months, we would identify one or two more MPIs. I think all told, by the end of the scheme, there was about 10 or 11 of these MPIs that the provider had opened in order to continue receiving payment from the plans.
I think there was more. Yeah, if I recall, there might have been even more than that. And I think in 1 month alone, there was like 9 or 10, but there was like several every month for quite a period of time.
Right. And I know that we had definitely monitored it for a while. And we, again, on behalf of our clients and in cooperation with our client, we had basically shopped this case around to several different agencies. And there wasn't immediate interest in all of this. However, I think we were at the point where we had gone to, again, the provider was not paying back the money, no way, shape or form. We had, again, basically packaged up our case and had turned it over to our client. And I don't recall the timeline. Law enforcement did finally get involved to the point where there were across several plans a few million dollars at issue that this provider, because again, not only with our client, he was also doing the same thing with a series of other insurance plans covering their area. So again, to make a long story short, he was arrested. There was a subsequent conviction, and I believe he is now a guest of the federal government in one of their fine institutions.
I think so. I think he gets out next year.
Potentially. Really?
Yeah, I think it's next year. Yeah.
I don't want to speak out of school, but I thought he got 10 years. Has it been 10 years already?
I think the time frame has been a little bit less than 10 years, but I think the actual date of release is technically 2024. Could double check. I know, because you and I'll check after we finish this.
I'm already typing. Yeah.
So kind of just a couple of things to maybe wrap this up a little bit. So you talk about, you know, when you first, you know, joined us at Healthcare Fraud Shield, you actually used our post-payment tool called PostShield, which was part of our platform, which is FWA Shield. How would you describe how technology has changed over the last, you know, how many years you've been doing this, and where do you see the future going?
I just actually see our analytics ability just to go further and further. And I think that with every case that we work, the program just keeps getting stronger because we're taking our experience from those cases and actually attempting to automate them into a lot of things that we had done manually before that we can actually have that done automatically by the program. We talked in this case about our MPI querying. Now we were able to basically take the elements of what we found in those manual searches that we did and actually have alerts that are actually specifically focused on MPI, where we can identify where you have a short period of time where a provider may be jumping back and forth between different MPIs and in order to sit there and help track a situation like that. So again, I think that we're going to be able as investigators, be able to focus our time better on other tasks besides analytics. I think that for our folks that do purely data analysis, I think that you're going to be able to find a lot more and you're going to make your investigators a lot busy. And I think the investigators are going to be able to do a lot more focus instead of working with the data. They're going to be able to go forward and do more investigator focused tasks like interviews and zeroing on the potential problems to use to come up with better medical record requests. and able to really nail down potential issues.
Yeah, I think it's great where we started and where we're going. Just increased efficiency, increased automation. So our folks that are doing kind of the human side, the human side of it can do more and more and more because so many other areas are being done either faster or in some cases, you know, partially for them. You know, it's a nice combination of technology and that subject matter expertise. We'll never get rid of technology, and you'll never get rid of the human side of it either. You need both. Right. And I think that, you know, as you said, you know, having our knowledge and skill set and experience has really helped to propel the technology forward. And it's been pretty neat to witness and pretty excited about where things keep going.
Right. Well, I think what you're alluding to is it's really becoming a symbiotic relationship between the investigator and the program. I think is that, again, the information feeds us, the program feeds us information in which we're able to turn and we're able to work and we're able to develop, and we're able to take the methodology and feed that almost back into the program. And then the program becomes better, which feeds us more information, more diverse information. And we're able to turn around. And I will say that it does push the subject matter expert to be a better investigator, to rely more on the things that, I mean, that there are always going to be things that you're going to need an investigator to do. Though with all the AI coming out, you know, as far as, I wonder where the future of actual face-to-face interviews are going to be after that.
It's a whole different world, but you know, we just learn to adapt and to, you know, figure out how to continue to do things effectively and efficiently.
Yes. I will tell you that I have really no intention of being replaced by a machine anytime soon. So
we will never be able to replace you, Ken. I'm stuck with you. So
pretty much. Sometimes I wonder if you regret ever answering the door that day at our former plan when I showed up.
Never. That's why we've been on this journey together and several other of our coworkers. So it's been terrific. So I thank you for sharing your insight today and appreciate all that you've done for this industry and that all that you do for Healthcare Fraud Shield. So thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Till we meet again.
Yep.
All right. Take care, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.